This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
I want to continue to be clear with Canadians that the path ahead will not always be easy. Because what's happening now in the global economy is not a transition, it is a rupture. The United States is fundamentally and rapidly transforming all of its trading relationships. And the effects are both immediate and profound. They're closing markets, disrupting supply chains, halting investment, and pushing up unemployment. Canadians are over the shock, but we must always remember the lessons. We have to look out for ourselves, and we have to take care of each other.
Welcome back to the Law Bites podcast. After an August and early September break, the podcast is back, and there are no shortage of issues to discuss. There are upcoming episodes planned on privacy, competition, intellectual property, internet regulation, and AI regulation, among other topics. But to get things started, this episode drops on the same day that the House of Commons returns from its summer break. So I'm going to provide a preview of what may lie ahead. That's no easy task. With so much political uncertainty worldwide and here at home, things can change rapidly. That said, we have some sense of government priorities and how they might fit within the broader digital framework. Let's start with the four bills that have already been introduced into either the House or the Senate. First, there's Bill C-2. A broad omnibus bill that was purported to deal primarily with the border, but as listeners of this podcast will know, notably includes the return of lawful access. One has the sense that the government introduced that bill thinking it would be a rapid response to Trump administration demands. Now, that obviously didn't happen, and you can't help but wonder if the bill will now move from the fast track to a more deliberate slow one with some amount of buyer's remorse on the part of the government. The particular concerns for the purposes of digital and privacy are parts 14 and 15, the lawful access provisions. Those parts of the bill sparked widespread opposition with relatively few public supporters. Part 14 deals with the issue of warrantless access to personal information. I think it runs the risk of being struck down, given some of the past Supreme Court of Canada decisions. And Part 15 deals with network security-related issues, which may conflict with U.S. laws and is likely to face significant opposition from telecom companies, internet providers, and I think the broader community as a whole. Now, the government's response could go in a number of different directions. It could decide to break the bill up and treat these issues separately. In other words, pull back parts 14 and 15, pull back the lawful access provisions, put it in its own bill, if they do in fact want to go ahead with it in its current format, and hold proper debate, proper hearing specifically on that legislation. From my perspective, I don't think they should be going ahead with lawful access at all, but if they are determined to do so, that's, I think, the appropriate approach. Alternatively, if they do move ahead with this full omnibus bill, the government could decide to break it up for the purposes of legislative review, send it to multiple committees with different committees at the House level dealing with different issues. That is certainly going to slow down the overall process. It's going to take up quite a bit of committee time, but at least it stands the hope of ensuring that there is some amount of detailed review of the provisions from a lawful access perspective, the implications, and some fixes. It's worth noting, during the debate over the summer and any number of interactions with government officials, there are already government officials acknowledging that there are multiple errors within the legislation that need fixing. And so the prospect that the government simply says it's perfect as written, I think, strikes me as exceptionally unlikely. I think it is also important to recognize that one of the things that has been missing from the debate so far is little actual evidence for why this is needed. I think that's an obligation the government has to bring to the table if it does, in fact, proceed with this legislation. It has to make the case that this is actually needed, why it's needed, what the use cases are. And I think fundamentally, particularly in the case of warrantless access, how it believes that the legislation is currently drafted will pass constitutional muster and indeed withstand a challenge at the Supreme Court of Canada that seems absolutely inevitable. No matter the approach, it's pretty clear that Bill C-2 is going to face a rough legislative ride. Hopefully the government used the summer to engage in a bit of a rethink. Secondly, there is Bill C-4, legislation that is talked about in the context of affordability measures, so some tax changes, but which also included provisions dealing with political party privacy. That too was an issue we dealt with in earlier episodes of this podcast. It is pretty clear that aspect of the bill does not belong, has nothing to do with the core of the legislation itself. It feels like it was added on very late, in all likelihood in response to ongoing litigation that's taking place in British Columbia. But the real question from a legislative perspective, assuming this bill does proceed through the House, is whether or not any of the major political parties are willing to take a stand on the issue. There is, I must admit, not a lot of reason for optimism, as all the political parties are determined to be able to access and use as much personal information as possible. The prospect of legislation that might inhibit some of that activity isn't something that is going to receive much political approval. Best case might well be that the Senate stands in opposition to some of these privacy provisions, but this feels like a train that is going to be very difficult to slow down. There's also Bill C-8, which marks the return of cybersecurity legislation. It's a bill for which privacy concerns have been raised in the past because this is largely the return of what was once Bill C-26. I suspect this bill is likely to move pretty quickly. It's a near identical version of what almost passed in the last House of Commons, the last Parliament. It didn't largely because of an administrative error that had the effect of nullifying a portion of the legislation that was discovered fairly late in the process at the Senate. And so the bill was sent back to the House for that fix, but that fix never came, and so the bill died with prorogation earlier this year. Government moved pretty quickly, as we can see, to bring that bill back, and given that it's already seen significant study, there might be opposition. There is opposition and concern with some of those provisions, but the political compromise has already been struck. Seems to me somewhat unlikely that we'll see this slow down and, in fact, could move quite quickly. Finally, amongst the bills that have already been introduced, there is Bill S-209. So that's the Senate. That's a Senate bill. It is the new S-210. And S-210 was the private members bill brought forward by Senator Julie Melville Deschene that involves age verification mandates for adult or pornographic websites. Now, S-210 nearly made it through the process. It passed in the Senate, and then it was at committee in the House when Parliament died, but was really just a couple of votes away from potentially being passed. The government, I think, notably opposed that legislation, but it had support from some of the opposition parties. The new bill, S-209, seeks to address some of the concerns and criticisms that arose in S-210, but certainly mandated age verification technologies is unquestionably going to remain controversial. There will still be privacy-related concerns. There will still be concerns about the prospect of website blocking, which is built into this legislation. But we have seen similar laws elsewhere. Now, there are variations between those different laws, and we need to talk about both the implications of those laws as well as the implications of using these kinds of technologies. But it is one of those bills that may move slowly but is likely to move, with debate first in the Senate, and if it does get once again through the Senate, then on to the House. Okay, that's what's already been introduced. What comes next? There's, I think, first an easy administrative one. One would hope that this will be a priority, or at least will be included in an effort to clean up errors in legislation. That's something I wrote about towards the end of the summer, involving what was once Bill C-11, the Online Streaming Act, and what appears to be the inadvertent deletion of a privacy safeguard that was built into the bill. So the government deleted, in fact, privacy safeguards just 2 months after Bill C-11 was passed, and somewhat incredibly, for a couple of years, nobody noticed. Now, as a result of the change, a provision that once stated that the Broadcasting Act, I'll quote, shall be construed and applied in a manner that is consistent with the right to privacy of individuals, was removed from the bill, leaving in its place two near identical provisions related to official languages. Now, you can read my blog to better understand why that took place. It involves a second bill that was proceeding at the same time as Bill C-11. It was Bill C-13 on official languages, and it had some changes that would occur to the Broadcasting Act. Those changes took place, and the effect was to misnumber the replaced provision and, in effect, take away the privacy provision. Heritage officials were asked about this, what I think was an error, and they suggested that it was a mistake. One would hope they would want to fix it, bring back the privacy provision and fix the interpretive clause within the Broadcasting Act so you don't have two provisions that are nearly identical talking about interpretation. It's the sort of thing they could move easily to fix, and obviously there wouldn't be any opposition to it. More controversial, but what I think is also somewhat straightforward, is to rescind the Digital Services Tax Act. Now, that's the legislation that purported to bring into effect the digital services tax. Listeners will recall that just days before the legislation was scheduled to take effect, or at least the first payments were due on the DST, the government caved to U.S. pressure and said that they would be rescinding that legislation, not collecting any of the applicable taxes, which was retroactive for several years, and moving to rescind the legislation as a whole. That was designed to put trade talks with the U.S. administration back on track. Those trade talks did resume, but there is as yet still no resolution on it. The government has said that they will, in fact, rescind the legislation, and notwithstanding some calls that have called on the government to reconsider that position, noting that there is still no trade deal, I must admit, I don't see that happening. I would imagine that rescission of the DST Act gets included in a budget implementation act. The government has announced that there will be a budget in October. There'll be an accompanying budget implementation act. One could well see provisions in there that rescind the DST Act as part of it. Now on to some of the bigger policies. Now, the framing at the moment around digital policy is largely around this notion of digital sovereignty, sort of a digital version of elbows up. I'm going to have more to say about digital sovereignty in the weeks ahead. I would say that I think there are elements of it that are worth considering and acting on. Privacy reform with real penalties, for example, speaks specifically to the issue of how our data and our personal information is protected in Canada. There are, I must admit, other elements that feel a bit like a rebranding of the so-called Made in Canada approach that we often saw with respect to legislation, with a bit of a doubling down on things like online streaming legislation and online news legislation. It's driving conversation, but we haven't yet seen the government take it on. In fact, in some ways, it's been the opposite, given, for example, Evan Solomon's comments on backing away from over-indexing on AI regulation. So I don't know that the digital sovereignty framing will be either limited to public debate or if the government will actually use it as sort of the core framing that it uses with respect to digital policy. Now, whether they do or not, I think we still have a pretty good sense of what some of the core things the government is going to focus on from a legislative perspective. I'm going to highlight five. First, online harms. Of course, in the last Parliament, that was Bill C-63, which never really went anywhere. Controversial, really, as a whole, certainly for some of the speech implications, but I think particularly controversial and faced even greater opposition than it might otherwise have for the fact that it included provisions dealing with both the Criminal Code and the Canadian Human Rights Act. The provisions dealing more specifically with online harms and the role that large online platforms should play in dealing with some of those harms, certainly was somewhat less controversial. Government adopting an approach of a duty to act responsibly, which found by and large a fair amount of support. Now, there was concerns certainly about some of the specifics there. There were concerns about how this would be enforced, some of the governance structure, some of the costs involved. But nevertheless, as a whole, it was generally viewed as something that was workable, at least for study purposes. The new Justice Minister, Sean Fraser, has said that protecting children will be one of his top priorities come the fall. Reports, I should note, indicate that bubble zone legislation will be first up. This could come as soon as this week. The big question with respect to online harms is what comes back. Is it the same bill? Is it limited to a duty to act responsibly? Do they take the position that towards the very end of the process, in the last go-round, then-Justice Minister Arif Irani said that he would in fact split up the bill, focusing on the core provisions related to internet platforms, that duty to act responsibly would have one track, and then there would be a separate track for the Criminal Code and Human Rights Act provisions. That certainly would have, I think, paved the way for at least further study with respect to the online harms piece and held the prospect of seeing that bill go forward. I think if the government is serious about trying to get something done, it will remove or ensure that the Criminal Code and Human Rights Act provisions do not return, at least do not return in this legislation, focus more specifically on the duties of internet platforms. You know, it's going to try to ensure that there is an appropriate system that is both effective in terms of some of the enforcement tools, but also deals specifically with the kinds of harms that in many respects are somewhat uncontroversial in the sense that they are by and large already dealt with within the Criminal Code. Of course, the government could decide that even that is more than they want to do. At this stage, they may want to focus more specifically on protecting children online. That would be an interesting choice. It would actually move the legislation closer to the proposal from the Conservative Party, which really tried to narrow its focus with harms with respect to kids. Regardless of the approach, look for something this fall. I think we could also look forward or look to the return of privacy legislation, potentially as soon as this fall as well. It's certainly one of those issues that so long as there is a separation of privacy and AI, essentially backing away from the last Parliament's Bill C-27 that sought to bring those two bills together, the government separates those out, seeks to provide the long overdue update to PIPEDA with real penalties in place, an update on some of the core kinds of provisions that have by now become fairly commonplace in many countries around the world, but for which in Canada either are not in the legislation or are left to the privacy commissioner and potentially the courts to try to read into the legislation. I think everybody agrees that an update is needed. It fits nicely within the digital sovereignty piece, so one can well imagine that we will see privacy reform introduced. And while privacy bills always can be a bit of a struggle at committee, if it does mark the return of many of the privacy provisions we saw in C-27, potentially bringing on board or incorporating some of the changes that were discussed as part of the study, it's the sort of bill that could find some pretty broad support pretty quickly as well. Third issue, of course, is around artificial intelligence or AI. There are a lot of calls for some form of AI regulation, but all the indications we have right now is that at least for the moment, that is unlikely to be a top government priority. They certainly have talked a lot about AI adoption and support for the AI sector. So there is a real concern or real interest in fostering, facilitating the AI sector and the economic benefits that might accrue from making AI a priority. Regulating AI at a time when there are a diverse range of approaches to AI may be viewed by some within the government as somewhat risky. Now, there are, of course, risks of not regulating, of not addressing some of the concerns that have been identified with respect to AI. But one gets the sense that at least at the moment, the priority is to ensure that Canada becomes one of the leading players with respect to AI from a commercial perspective, consistent with years of being a leader on the research side, and that there will be an attempt certainly to apply some of the existing rules to AI that could include, for example, intellectual property. But the prospect of a broad-based AI bill, similar to what we saw within C27, or potentially even similar to what we've seen come out of the European Union, doesn't seem, at least at this moment, like a top priority. In fact, we even see that within the EU, there is some amount of buyer's remorse, some countries expressing concern that it may have an impact on their adoption of AI and certainly some of their commercialization of AI opportunities. I suspect we will tread a bit more carefully there, with more of an emphasis on the economic opportunities with government so-called investment in some AI, and trying to really position Canada as a leader in the space, with the prospect of stepping in with more regulations later. That's going to leave a lot of people concerned and certainly unsatisfied, but that certainly, at least for the moment, seems to be where the government's head is at. Fourth, there's intellectual property. And so we can see some IP-related work. I'm not sure that it's going to be a top priority. In fact, I don't think it necessarily will, but there are a number of issues that are on the table. We've seen, and I'm hoping to deal with it in an upcoming episode over the summer, new regulations with respect to plant breeding rights. Now, people wouldn't necessarily associate plant breeders and some of the issues there either with IP or with this podcast, but there's some really interesting and I think important intellectual property related issues there. There are some big implications for farmers. And so we could see this issue in particular, I think, gain a bit of traction, particularly from members of parliament that represent some of those ridings and constituencies with large agricultural sectors. Copyright and AI is attracting global attention. We've seen a lot of cases. There are at least a couple of cases currently underway in Canada. The question, though, is whether or not the government is going to choose to act on the issue at this moment in time. One gets the sense, not quite yet, that there is still a willingness to allow some of these cases to play themselves out. As I say, we've seen quite a lot in the United States, a very big recent settlement just in the last couple of weeks in the United States. And we'll talk more about that in an upcoming podcast as well. The Canadian cases, which involve news media and legal decisions, they'll need to, I think, make their way through, along with, I should note, a number of class actions that are somewhat similar to what we see in the United States. So all of that is to say that there's a lot happening at the court level. I think that we'll wait for that to play out before the government moves on it. Finally, there's this notion of an artist's resale right that has been an ask or demand of visual artists from the creative sector for many, many years. The government has provided some indications that there is support for this at some point in time. And so could we see that also in a Budget Implementation Act? Could we see it as a standalone bill? Doesn't sound like it's the top priority for the government, but it's certainly a possibility, especially at a time when the upcoming budget is likely to involve a lot of cuts. Those cuts certainly could hit the cultural sector. And so we might see the government try to offset some of the cuts that it makes with some legislative change, and that might fit the bill. Finally, fifth, there are trade-related implications for digital policy and for what we see take place in Parliament. I think we can see this taking place in a number of different venues. The most obvious, of course, is Canada-US relations. The discussions, debates, the challenge of striking a deal with the United States is ongoing. And there has been no shortage of speculation that having succeeded from a Trump administration perspective in getting Canada to rescind the digital services tax, the DST, could pressure mount on Bill C-11 and C-18, on the Internet Streaming Bill and the Internet News Bill. There have been some amount of reports talking about freedom of expression, I believe, coming out of the State Department when it came to C-18, the news bill, and certainly quite a lot of talk and attention, especially from the U.S. Congress, around the streaming bill and mandated payments. I think that is likely to escalate depending on what the CRTC does with the streaming bill. If we do see mandated payments, and there's every reason to think there will be mandated payments required, alongside frameworks in which large U.S. streaming companies do not benefit or cannot benefit from those contributions. That's the sort of thing that one might well imagine the U.S. escalating as an issue and including it within the relationship. And then the question becomes, as part of those trade talks, is that something, once again, that Canada would be willing to walk away from for the sake of a larger deal? You know, somewhat related to this ongoing discussions right now, of course, is the renegotiation of CUSMA or the USMCA. That included any number of digital related provisions that are notable, including a Canadian version of the Communications Decency Act, CDA Section 230 sub C. It's a provision that provides immunity for internet intermediaries. We've never seen Canada incorporate the same provisions within Canadian law, but ostensibly it's an obligation to ensure that we meet the same standard. The renegotiation of CUSMA could, of course, include many of these issues. And one of the issues that it could also include beyond intermediary liability has to do with data localization. And, you know, the talk around data sovereignty has often focused on the necessity, in the view of some, for Canada to ensure that data remains localized. I've written and held podcasts in the past that talked about, if we're going to focus on this, the need to twin both the localization of the data with regulations, with privacy protections that actually provide effective safeguards. Localization of the data alone, I don't think, is sufficient. But we could see this as a topic, and we could see the U.S. seek to ensure that there is free flow without any localization. And so that would put the trade goals that come up through CUSMA set up against some of the digital sovereignty concerns about ensuring that data remains local, and that Canada has the option and the power to require localization in some circumstances. And finally, within the trade context, there's, of course, outside the United States, there's Canada and the EU, Canada and the rest of the world. We are having discussions with Asia and the ASEAN on a trade deal that includes many of these kinds of issues. And there's been a lot of talk about getting closer to the EU. In fact, there's been discussion specifically around creating a digital trade agreement specifically with the EU. There was a consultation on that over the summer. Government put on the table a very ambitious set of issues, far beyond any agreement that we've already entered into from a digital trade perspective, far beyond anything that Europeans have entered into. So I don't know that there is support within the EU for something like that, but it does highlight that one way that we could see significant change when it comes to digital policy is not directly within the House of Commons, but is through these trade discussions, whether that's through with the United States or Asia or Europeans. So there is a lot going on, and this doesn't even include competition-related issues, CRTC decisions that we will see in the coming months, particularly around the implementation of the Online Streaming Act, as well as some of the ongoing litigation that I've mentioned that touches on privacy, artificial intelligence, and the Online Streaming Act. That's all coming. Some of it's going to come before the end of the year. So buckle up. There's a lot on the way, and I look forward to talking about many of these issues on future Law Bites episodes. That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at LawBitesPod, or follow Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.